So I'm Rick Hansen, and this is July 29th, 2015. And if you've been here the last few weeks, you know that we've kind of really gone after it. I think of sort of like the deep end of the pool. And I wanted to speak more briefly tonight and have more time for question and discussion. So quick recap. Several meetings ago, I should add also, we were going to have Jamal Yogis tonight presenting on fear. He discovered at the last minute that there was some technical problem with getting his film to show on the computer that he was going to bring in. So we're going to postpone that. So that's that part. And so with regard to what we've been doing in here, a few meetings ago, I raised the question of why do we practice? And brought up the notion of, in addition to practicing for ourselves, practicing for the sake of others. And what is it really like to feel in one's heart, even expressed concretely as the wish, looking at others, the person across the dinner table, the teenager who's driving you crazy, you know, the stranger walking down the street, may you be awakened. May you be awakened in this life. May you be truly happy and at peace. What's that like to have a practice motivated by that kind of sincere feeling and wish for others? Drawing on, in part, the notion of the bodhisattva, which has been very developed in Tibetan Buddhism in particular. So the week after that, or the meeting after that, rather, I talked about what we practice, and what we practice being both disengaging from the doomed and suffering-saturated conventional pursuit of happiness, where it cannot be found, in terms of lasting happiness, cannot be found in changing conditions. And instead, is the second part of practice, what we practice, resting our minds increasingly upon that which calls us, upon our own sense of the qualities, really, of enlightened mind. In effect, reverse engineering enlightened mind. And then the meeting after that, I believe last meeting, I talked about one of the major common indicators you see in the essence of that which we can rest our minds upon instead of the stuff that causes suffering and harm, one of the major attributes being stillness. Because if that which is continually changing is an unreliable basis for true happiness, that which is still, or as the Buddha called it, the deathless, the unconditioned, not subject to arising and passing away, that's where we can really fall back and be held. That's what we can root ourselves in, and on the basis of that, live our life. Of course, how to rest our minds increasingly upon that which could be unconditioned, unchanging, still, in a world of constant change, outer and inner change, you know, is no small thing. So last time we met, I talked about four places to find stillness, starting with fairly simple things in everyday life. You know, the moment where you throw a ball and it goes up, and just before it starts to come down again, it's still in terms of the vertical dimension. Or being in nature, silence, or as John Cage talked about it, the space between the notes. Those are all various kinds of stillness. And there are other places to find stillness as well. So today I want to go a step further in terms of kind of bringing it down to earth and talk about a couple other qualities that I see in people that I think of as very far along the path, and also qualities in our own mind when we're undisturbed, when we're not alarmed or driven or caught up in, as the Buddha called it, the second noble truth of craving, a kind of thirst for more of the good, or a thirst for the unpleasant to go away. And these two qualities are acceptance and all rightness. And if you bring it down to your own experience, that's what I've seen, if you bring it to your own experience, you ask yourself in any moment, if there is accepting, what is that like? In the accepting, the clenched fist of me, myself, and I tends to relax and open. In the accepting, drivenness, imbalance, struggle with others tends to fall away. You know, then in the next moment, something else could be happening. But then you return to the accepting. What's that like? And also alongside the accepting, kind of overlapping it, but alongside it, I think meaningfully distinct, it can be a sense of all rightness. Just all right. It may not be the greatest moment in the world. There might be some moments in which you cannot authentically find acceptance or all rightness. But I think in most moments, it's actually quite accessible to us to open to an acceptingness in our attitude and open to a feeling of the all rightness of this particular moment. So how to ground increasingly in that? So I have a couple of suggestions, of course, and then we'll talk about it. And I want to, in particular, so I want to do a little thing with you, if you don't mind. So if you could, kind of funny, if you will, in a moment, just find someone near you and take turns saying no, okay? Not accepting, okay? And then we'll go to yes. Trust me, we'll end on a good note. Okay, I want to just turn to someone and say, take turns saying no. And what's it like? Okay. All right. Now, and again, try to notice what it's like. And you can even play with it, you know, to have an experience. Okay, now do yes. What is yes like? Okay. All right. Okay, now one more. It's really interesting, isn't it? Just in that word, what's it like? You know, the body, what does the body do when you say no or hear no? Or what does the body do when you say yes or hear yes? Here's the next round. It's not all right. So just say to each other back and forth, and it's okay to turn to other people if you want to really mess with their heads or something. Just say, it's not all right. Okay, take turns saying it's not all right. Okay, go. Okay, now let's take it to a whole kind of another level. If you could, imagine yourself is in front of you in some way, seated, standing, something like that. And you could do it quietly inside your own mind, or you can say it out loud. You might add your name if you want or not. And imagine saying to that being who is yourself, it's not all right. Try that. And feel free to play with it too. It's good. I hear some people, you know, changing the form. That's good. Wow, what is that like? Yeah? We'll debrief this in a minute. Okay, let's just finish on the other side of it. If you don't mind, saying to other people, you know, it's all right. It's all right. So try that. Okay, and then finishing quietly in your mind as you like, or out loud, however, you know, and playing with it as you like, imagine yourself. And if you want, you can imagine younger or perhaps older versions of yourself, or perhaps imagine yourself in certain key chapters of your life. junior high school, you know, in a tricky situation, you know, the minute after you got really bad news, or the minute after someone was really mean or harmful, hurtful to you, or at other moments, if you will, saying, it's all right. So play with that to yourself. It's all right. And then if you want, you can take just a half minute here to flip it around and imagine receiving, being the one who's been spoken to, receiving communications that it's all right. What's that like? Or perhaps imagine those younger layers in yourself that have been hearing it's all right. Imagining them actually receiving right now the message, it's all right. Okay, come on back. Let's debrief that for a bit, and then I'll make a few more comments so we can talk more. What'd you notice? How was that? A few people?
It's all right.
What? What'd you say? It's all right? Yeah.
When I was saying it's not all right, I felt a lot of sadness. And I noticed that I was not animated, not in my body, but when I was saying, it's all right, I, you know, shaking my head, yes, it's all right, and, you know, more body movement.
Okay, thank you. Other people? Yeah.
We noticed it took a lot more energy to say no, no, no. To say yes was easy. It was pleasing, and it was much more relaxed.
Yeah. Okay, good, thank you. Gabriel?
There's a sense of stern and judgmental boundary making that it's not all right. Mm-hmm. And then right away switching to the other one was a sense of elation and everything is possible. It's all right.
Mm-hmm. Good, thank you. Yeah, please.
Great sense of relief whether it's all right.
Yeah.
And almost like a lightness.
Yeah. Thank you. Please.
I felt the no and the yes, I both felt in my heart. And the yes was kind of a constriction, or the no was a constriction right down the middle. Mm-hmm. And the yes was just open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. Maybe another person or two? Yeah.
And I think it's all right. It's much more relaxing to say that.
Yeah.
You've got to relax into it.
Yeah. Thank you. Last person.
I look at it as a therapeutic phrase. It's not all right. We used to use that with the disturbed kids.
Uh-huh.
But that's, you know, kind of a nice way to address behavior. It's not all right to, you know,
okay.
That kid.
Yeah, so your point is there can be a way of the language that feels okay and wise. Mm-hmm. Like to a child, it's not all right, rather than you're bad, Johnny, or something like that.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for that.
Sure.
Great, one more person.
Boundary setting was sort of self-preservational, and I actually felt kind of like protecting myself. It actually felt, in a way, kind of loving.
To say it's not all right, or no? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. That's great. So I really appreciate the last 2 points, because it's not in the words, because the words can mean something very different,
right,
depending on what they are. What I would point out, though, in general, and I think, you know, it's usually the case that people noted, when there's an underlying sense of something missing or something imbalanced, that tends to tip us into what the Buddha called the second noble truth of craving, where we get driven, grasping, aversive, clinging, you know, deluded, just to escape, and so forth. But on the other hand, when there's a sense of enoughness, there's enough. Or balance, then the body, mind, the little animal, you know, I talk about the inner lizard, mouse, and monkey related to the evolution of the brain, brainstem, subcortex, cortex. Those little critters in the inner zoo kind of chill. They're still doing their thing, you know, but they're chilled and they're not caught up in a futile search for happiness. And so I want to talk a little bit about some of the things that you might look at to cultivate more of a sense of, and I'm going to put them kind of together, accepting and a sense of all-rightness. You call it accepting all-rightness together. And to be clear, I'm not using this as a way of saying, oh, we ought to accept terrible things, or, oh, yeah, it's all right that 1 in 5 kids in America lives below the poverty line. 1 in 4 in America, for example. But as kind of an inner practice, like an inner indicator, an inner guiding light that's very palpable in any moment, you can kind of feel it. Is there accepting in the mind, or is the mind colored by non-acceptance? You know, is there an underlying sense of all-rightness in the mind, or is there an underlying sense of fear or frustration or heartache? That's a version of the third foundation of mindfulness in that form of practice in Buddhism. You know, what are the mental qualities there, right? So, first question could be, can you accept this moment of experience? Can you feel all right in this moment of experience? Continually, as you be mindfully aware of the moment again and again and again. At least once a day, can you feel in your heart, it's okay. It is what it is. May not be my preference, I'm accepting it. And it's not a perfect moment, I'm not the happiest camper in the world necessarily, and still there's a basic sense of all rightness. One thing I was just reflecting on a few moments ago was imagining being a typical Stone Age person, you know, 30,000 years ago, right? Hungry, flea-bitten, no pain control, worried about the other tribes on the horizon who might attack. Worried about family, wondering where the next food is going to come from, no food storage, right? And imagining taking that person 30,000 years ago or 100,000 years ago and teleporting them into a car today stuck in traffic or at an airport with their flight 2 hours delayed, right? Like, how would it be for that person to be sitting stuck in traffic in an air-conditioned car, listening to music, you know, tuning into sports or whatever? Like, they'd be like the best moment they've had in a long time, right? Oh, yeah. So there are many different ways of, you know, of thinking about these moments that we have for ourselves. So can the moment be all right? Can there be acceptance of the moment? And meditation is a great practice for that. Mind wanders, you come back, accepting. Can you find accepting of the moment continually? Okay. Second one to look at is the other person. Can there be accepting and all rightness with the other person, who that other person might be? Maybe it's literally the person you're whatever with, talking with, looking at, friend, family, stranger on the street, person that's difficult for you. Could be a member of a class of people or a class of people all together. Can there be a feeling inside of, you know, I don't prefer you the way you are, or maybe I like you as you are, and I wish for more, and still, I can feel in this moment accepting. It's really an interesting practice, isn't it? Including people, it's easy to accept people who are rubbing your feet and putting bonbons in your mouth, or hooking you up to IV chocolate, let's say. But can you accept people that you're struggling with or arguing with? Or you want something from and they're not giving it to you? Doesn't mean you give up your rights, but can there be a sense of accepting it as it is? It is reality. Can I accept it as it is? Also, can you still feel all right that they are the way they are? And can you feel maybe more globally that it's all right they are the way they are? You know, in the largest sense, there's a sense of all rightness. Yeah, please.
Could you connect that to empathy?
Oh, sure. You could have a sense of empathy for them. I think empathy helps us have more of a sense of acceptance. You know, we start understanding more of the causes of why they are the way they are. Yeah. We can understand more our impact on them, maybe why they're doing that. Third, just kind of place to look. It's like, you know, the Buddha talked about the foundations of mindfulness, probably the fundamental practice, teaching, you know, in the early teachings of Buddhism. But one of the translations is not so much foundations, but establishings. Where do we establish mindfulness? Or what are we mindful of, right? So another one is yourself. Can there be accepting and all righting, as it were, of yourself? With your body, with your abilities and lack thereof, you know, with your accomplishments, can there be a sense of, okay, it's all right. It's all right. One thing that helps me do that is to put it in a larger scheme of things. You know, when I think about how many billions of people live on the earth today, sometimes I think about people in different time zones. You know, I'm falling to sleep, let's say, and I imagine, because I've been there maybe, you know, what's happening in New York or another part of the world, you know, where I just might imagine what's there. And I realize, oh, wow, in Moscow, people are walking around, having coffee in the street, you know, catching buses, worrying about their kids. You know, it's like in that largest sense of the world, you know, is it all right that I am the way I am? Can I accept myself? Is there a sense of all rightness? So right there again, it's an invitation. Can there be a sense of all rightness about yourself rather than some wrongness? You know, all wrongness, all missingness, all if-onlyness, you know? Yeah, it's really interesting to play with that. Like really undisturbed about the mess you are. Yeah. You know, on mission, working your practice, watering the fruit tree one step at a time, making your offering, while simultaneously kind of like a happy shrug of who you are, right? And then last, can there be a sense of all rightness in really the broadest possible sense you can take it out? If it works for you, cool. If it doesn't work for you, no worries. But there could be kind of the sense of, for me, again, it really helps to just imagine the vastness of space and time. You know, that whatever is messed up about our planet, and there's a lot that could be better, and there's a lot that tears in my own heart, still, you just kind of pull back, you know? It's like bird's eye view. You get up really close, but then you start pulling back, you see suddenly, you know, one solar system, one planet, or one, pardon me, star, among roughly 100 billion in the Milky Way, right? And then you pull back further and you see 200 billion galaxies in the whole universe. And you kind of, you know, you think about the universe already about 13.8 or so billion years old, probably going to be roughly 100 billion years old before, whoosh, you know, everything just disperses-ish, who knows? Like, wow. You know, there can be kind of a sense of all rightness with allness as it is. Allness is always allness. Whatever could be wrong in the local part of the ocean, this storm, this tidal wave, you know, this event, the ocean is always all right. You kind of can get that about reality altogether, the all rightness of reality altogether, if that's meaningful to you. So anyway, I just wanted to offer those as four possible invitations into the felt sense of all rightness as a matter of practice, not a matter of belief, but in the moment of feeling all rightness. However you get there, just thinking about your cat in your lap, right there, I'm in all rightness. Right there, even though our cat is no longer alive, just recalling Tsunami sitting in my lap, tidal wave, because he's long and could jump to the roof from the ground. You know, wow, whatever takes you to all rightness. Grandma's ginger snap cookies. all rightness, right? The Golden State Warriors winning the championship.
Yes.
Whatever takes you there. That's what I'm talking about. And I'm just naming kind of like four invitations, you know, the all-rightness of the moment of experience, the all-rightness of the other person, the all-rightness of yourself, the all-rightness of reality altogether. And there could be other invitations as well that really work for you. Whatever helps you relax and not get caught up in craving. Okay? Yeah. Great. That's my little chat. What do you think?
Seems like it might be a stupid question, but...
Unlikely.
What if I were an axe murderer?
What?
What if I were an axe murderer?
You should get counseling.
I'm not going to argue with you.
Yeah, really. let's play with that for a second, right? So let's say, maybe more commonly, you're in that moment when you're doing something, for lack of a better word, bad, harmful, hurtful. You're really angry. You're grinding on someone. I'm thinking of things I've done, certainly. And then usually soon afterward, can you find an all rightness there, you know? And I guess the way I would look at it is that while in some sense it's not all right for the little kid to bonk the other kid on the head with the toy truck, in the same way, it's not all right in some sense for us to do certain things. You know, can you also perhaps find an underlying sense of what is all right? So maybe in that moment, it's not authentic to feel I'm all right. I got it, you know? And maybe in that moment, it just makes your head tilt to think of all rightness of poverty, injustice, war, ethnic cleansing, you know, et cetera, corruption, so forth, patriarchy, et cetera, to go, wow, that's not all right. I'm just, in a sense, inviting you to look at your own practice. What helps you cling less and love more? Really? And what helps in this exploration of what is involved with opening into enlightened mind at the next level that's in reach for you? Because to me, that's so much what practice is about. Opening into the next step of who you're becoming in a good sense. I guess thanks for that. That was far from an unsmart question. Yeah, what do you guys think about this? And especially I'm interested in this at practice, not in the level of how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, you know, which sometimes this sort of teaching can go to. But more like, what helps you, and you know what it feels like, to just soften and open, right? What helps you to disengage in the war? Like get out of the alarm. I think a lot about how, because of the brain's negativity bias and so forth, we live in a world of false alarms a lot, or the inner ad agency. It's like we have an inner threat level orange broadcaster when it's just fine, and we have an inner ad agency that's telling us to chase more and more and more when we're already full. Right? That's a fantastic way to keep lizards, mice, and monkeys alive. But you know, today it creates a lot of suffering. What helps you disengage from that delusional alarm system or that delusional reward-seeking advertising system that's inside your head?
That's what I was going to say.
To
compartmentalize a little bit, to be accepting and to have a sense of all rightness, but still have another compartment that says, well, I don't like it. I accept it and it's all right. But I don't like it.
It's unpleasant. I wish it were different. Mm-hmm. I wish that child were not hungry, or I wish this tooth did not ache so badly. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. While, can you find an all rightness in the tooth hurting?
Sure.
That's really kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You sit with the pain, maybe.
Yeah. There's a story it's a true story that kind of pops out. this monk in, I think, Thailand told the story. He had a toothache. He had a rotten tooth, a really bad tooth. And there's a lot of poverty in that framework and not that much access to modern or expensive medical care. So he decided to pull his tooth himself. And by the way, I had a dentist in when I lived in Finland for a year. He pulled his own tooth one time. Of course, he was a dentist, but anyway. So, okay. So this monk, you know, pulls his tooth. And another monk asked him, how could you possibly do that? Weren't you, you know, really bothered by it? He said, well, you know, he was going to go to the tool shed where the pliers were. He said, you know, in the morning, there was no distress. You know, walking through the temple toward the tool shed, no distress. On the path to the tool shed, no distress. Opening the door to the tool shed, no distress. Reaching for the pliers, no distress. Placing the pliers on my mouth, no distress. A moment of distress. Putting the pliers down, no distress. You know, walking out of the tool shed, no distress. Just what you're saying. You know, can you find at least whatever might be all right for you? Yeah, and again, what works for you? I know for myself, I just watch these two habits, the habit of alarm and the habit of drivenness. My wife is probably more rooted in the habit of alarm. I'm more rooted in the habit of drivenness. But you can see them arising in your mind, right? I'm kind of talking here about using accepting and also using a sense of all-rightness to help quiet the habit of delusional alarm, unnecessary anxiety, unnecessary bracing, resisting, struggling, anticipating. So much of anxiety is anticipatory. It's about the future. It's about the bad thing that could happen, right? As they say about people jumping off a building, you know, it's the fall that never kills you. It's the landing. But anyway, I won't go there. So you know, so good so far. Okay, you see what I'm saying? And also what helps you pull out of drivenness, which often tends to be more the issue of many people, especially in our goal-directed, consumer-oriented culture. Yeah?
Something you said a while ago about how so many things are out of our control and come from things way back up down the upstream has helped me a lot in terms of saying, well, you know, maybe this is just beyond what I have, and it just is.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that. Right. Yeah. Thank you. Please.
I've just been a lot of metta for a long time now. And
loving kindness practices, yeah.
And I love it, except it makes me a lot more sensitive. Not except, but in addition, it makes me. And just before meditation tonight, I read the story about Cecil the lion that got killed. Mm-hmm. And I, in the middle of meditation, I just started crying about Cecil the lion.
Yeah.
And I hated the man. In my heart, I was so angry. And I thought, wow, this is really weird. You're really hating someone you don't even know this guy. Yeah. And I went through all these emotions really quick. And then I just tried to have compassion for him. I still couldn't muster the compassion for him at all. But I kind of got to the place of some steadiness of, okay, it happened, and let it go. But it was just crazy how much emotion I had for the lion and anger towards him, but then to be able to just ground it all and come back to my meditation. So, for what it's worth.
No, thank you for saying that.
I was thinking and feeling and getting back to the groundedness.
I'm really struck when I reflect on myself and also other people about this material. I'm really struck by how cognitive people get. How very cognitive, conceptual, rather than what's the feeling in your body of accepting? Like if you just kind of track something, exhaling. That's what accepting feels like a lot. What's all rightness feel like? You know, that's what we're really talking about here, and finding the accepting. The feeling of accepting. It's okay to have it be kind of philosophical or thoughtful or a little top down, but I think where the real action is bottom up. The feeling of accepting. You know, mindfulness of that, cultivation of that. And also the feeling of all rightness. I know for myself, when I'm in the feeling of accepting, I'm not one bit less energized, you know, directed, careful, planful, strong, assertive. Same with all rightness. You know, when I'm in the feeling of all rightness, I don't suddenly go into just torpor or lethargy. I'm actually happier and more kind of energized, looking for opportunity. I invite you into engaging this at the level of the body, an emotion, the feeling of accepting. What's the feel? Or the feeling of all rightness. There was some hand. Go, good, very good.
The difference between it's all rightness and condoning
sure.
something that is not all right.
Yeah.
Take Monsanto for an example.
Did you say Monsanto?
Monsanto.
Yeah, the chemical.
With chemical seeds. And
sure.
It's not all right. But how do I not condone? I mean, by my not saying it's all right, but I end up condoning it.
Well, two things. And, you know, I think what you're raising and others have as well is very legitimate. But isn't it interesting where attention has gone here? Because we've gone to the hard cases, the axe murderer, the chemical pesticide company, right? Okay, and let's even grant that it's not useful, perhaps, in practice, because that's my focus here, not philosophy, but pragmatism. What's useful in reducing suffering and harm? Okay, so let's grant that accepting or all righting on those tiles of the mosaic of reality, okay, that's... We're not there yet. That's not clear. Maybe we shouldn't even do it. Okay? But what about all the other tiles of the mosaic of reality that we don't notice? That, or are actually fine, but delusionally, we get alarmed about them. We paint them with threat level orange, even though they're actually green. There's no problem there, really. Or we get driven around them, even though meanwhile, we already have so much. So, you know, I want to be clear. I think it's really okay and interesting to go after the tough cases. But I also want to just point out our mind in general tends to drift away from so many things that are perfectly acceptable. The mind, for survival purposes, is constantly looking for what's not acceptable and what's not all right. And we could watch our minds doing that here as well, right? Live, right here, right now. And that's okay. But in addition to that, right, what about all those things in yourself, in the moment, in the other person, and in reality altogether that there could be a feeling of accepting for, or a feeling of, or the basis for a felt sense of all rightness for? Can you broaden attention and not let it be so hijacked by the Stone Age habits of mind, by those few tiles that are in fact legitimately alarming or toward which legitimately maybe we really should be driven? I don't know about you, but my attention tends to not go to those qualities in myself that are really all right or the all rightness in my life. It's always looking for a problem to solve. You know, or something new to want, right? And let's be functional in the world, but can we also open to the basis for the feeling of accepting and the feeling of all rightness when it's actually legitimately present? What do you think about that? Yeah, please.
Couldn't there be Monsanto, for example? Wouldn't it be all right, say this man is against Monsanto, which I'm also against Monsanto, and I think that's all right. And I think it's all right that it's come to my attention, and I think it's all right because it gives me an opportunity to maybe make a difference. I think it's all right from the context of it. It's all right to take it on. It's all right to follow through. It's all right to work with this part of myself to maybe do something about Monsanto. And not like fighting it, but it's all right to make this
yeah.
consciousness change and include other people in a collective consciousness to, I don't know, I was just thinking that.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Yeah, I think people, a version of this for the, let's say the challenging tiles in the mosaic, okay, is to find a way to have equanimity, because that's kind of what I'm talking about, while engaging in social justice work or speaking truth to power. You know, the condition may not be all right in some sense, but internally, deep down, at least in one's core or foundation or inner sanctum, there's a place inside you that is of stillness and balance that is all right, even though, even with, something like that. I think that's really true. And also, if I could, again, think of all the little things. Like that refrigerator, okay, that bugs you because it's something. Or your body. Or that gray hair. Or that spot on your shirt. Right? Can you find a place, a feeling of accepting and all righting, even with that? That's what I think a lot the action is. You know, it's with very simple things. In this moment while breathing, can there be a feeling of accepting while breathing? In this moment while driving, can I locate a feeling of personal all rightness in my being, in my core? It's kind of, I don't know. I find that really down to earth, really accessible, you know? And you'll watch your mind. It's so deluded. It's like threat level orange. It's like all the time looking for alarm. You know, like, what? Here we are, at least in this moment, now and now continually, usually. Like, it's all right, right? No alarm. It's so interesting, isn't it? Okay, finishing up, yeah.
I've always been able to imagine things that other people never even dreamed of when it comes to fearful things. And one of the nice things about this group is I've managed to dial that way back just because I don't imagine those terrible things. I stop and think that I can breathe, and in that moment, I don't yeah. have to be afraid. And I think that's yeah. that whole imagination of terrible things going to happen, as you say over and over again to us, that we yeah. just go to that place when we yeah. need to be in this place.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. You know, you're reminding me of another way of saying what at least I've been trying to say is, what's it like to find your way to and then rest more and more deeply in? I think so much about practice is about depth and continuity. You know, moments of awakening many times a day, right? Sudden awakening, gradual cultivation, sudden awakening. You know, depth and continuity of how we want to be, how we aspire to be in a very healthy sense. And so a version of this is to find a mind or moments of not resisting. In other words, accepting. And also not chasing. It's all right. Can you find your way into a mind in which there's little or no resisting, at least in this moment, and little or no chasing, while still being very engaged in life and not picking up that axe and, you know, doing what we can with the chemical companies. Right? Okay, so let's sit for a little bit. And for a minute, you know, what's it like to explore not resisting or chasing? You know, accepting and all righting. And super briefly, I really appreciated the Monsanto and axe murder question. The axe murderers at Monsanto, the new reality TV show, I don't know. But because in it, and your comment over there, because it really helps me kind of clarify what, at least for I'm trying to say, which is that however not all right the conditions are, okay, and I'm on reflection dealing with a situation in my extended family where something really is kind of crazy. And, you know, it really is kind of crazy. And the question, though, is can what? Deep down, be at peace inside, contented inside, and loving inside, even as one deals with the madness. You know, that's kind of what I'm talking about. And in that, you might find it helping you as guideposts and kind of like magnets sort of drawing you. The feeling of accepting and the deep, the bone deep feeling of personal all rightness. And you might enjoy exploring this this week. So may you be well. Thanks. Great.